shaming me into service.
I'm going to guilt you into some prayer, right, please.
Ready?
Okay, we got... I'm just making sure our quality control is good. All right. God, we thank you for the opportunity to serve. We thank you for the opportunity to gather, for the means to do it, for the technology, for those that have supported and made this possible that we do this. And we offer this time to your care and control, trusting that it will fall on the ears ready to hear it, let it inspire, encourage, and help someone who is suffering in any way. We ask you to continue to lead us and guide us in our own sober journeys, and that we would be inspired by others too. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you, man.
Okay. Thank you for shaming me into prayer. All right, you ready?
Yes, sir.
Wait, hold on, because it hasn't hit me yet. I'm waiting for the pills to hit, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Christian, I'm done with you.
Welcome to the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
My name is Reverend Christian Jansen, and today we're going to be talking about milestones in recovery. Everybody got a milestone. Everybody got a milestone.
Talk about it.
My favorite thing about milestones is when people post on social media that it's day 472. And I think, oh, okay, we're counting it like
then
that.
I got to figure it out, right? Yeah. 387 days, that's...
It's like when someone's baby is 17 months. Yeah. And you're like, 17 months?
I posted 1,000 days.
Oh, don't worry. I've done it too.
That's big.
Don't worry. I've done it too.
1,000 days is 1,000.
We all need a little. We need that little dopamine hit.
You need that extra zero. Like, it's gangster. That's a gangster number.
Exactly. But we're also gonna. I think this is an interesting topic for a couple reasons. And so we have a couple guests with us. Crystal, who is one of our favorite people to have.
Damn right. A legend in the game. I would say, if I say so myself.
And she brought along her new best friend, Melissa.
Hello.
What's up, Melissa?
What's up?
And then we also have a certified addiction counselor specialist.
Hello.
And David Cleope.
That's me right here.
Jacob is on the ones and twos.
My man.
And yeah, how's that for an intro? You feel like we get it?
Did
we
hit
it?
Good.
Did we do it?
Solid.
All right.
I love David's. Hello.
Yeah. It's really close to the Nazi wave, though, bro.
Did you see the thing of him, like, bouncing back and forth? Who? Hitler, like, he was there saying he was so, like...
Jacked up on speed.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You see him, like, during the Olympics, and he is whacked out, man.
Yeah. Well, that's, like, a big thing for them. That's how they... were so good at war. They were all anyways, spun out.
Yeah, enough about the Nazis.
Yeah. Talking about milestones.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I want to jump on. I want to start with something harder. I want to start with this.
All right.
This, the time in recovery. Right. Who has had some time in relapse? Anyone in this?
Mm-hmm. Had time in relapse?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, not yet?
No, I just not yet.
That's not what I mean. I'm the same way. I'm not yet either.
Yeah. Well, no. So I was just a chronic relapser, and I couldn't accumulate more than maybe like a month or two.
Uh-huh.
This is the first like serious... like length of sobriety that I've ever had.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Same here.
And I'm going to keep it that way. So yeah. I'm going to keep doing the damn work.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess what you're saying is like in those moments when, in that time when you were kind of getting 30 days or 15 days or whatever, you weren't actually even really starting the recovery process.
Mm-mm. No. Mm-hmm.
Would that be for?
Well, I can definitely look back and say, oh, I wasn't doing that. I wasn't doing this. I didn't take this part serious. You know, but I did have a sponsor one time and relapsed.
Yeah, me too.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Most of the time, so I get to my four step and say, sheep, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, the three step shuffle.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Melissa?
You know, this is the first time where I've actually taken my recovery seriously and done everything that they've suggested. I've been in and out of this program since I was 17 or 18 years old. But I would get, you know, a couple months and then go back. A couple months and then go back, you know. So it's,
yeah,
it's been a roller coaster.
So, like, because Hank said it pretty good when he was on. Hank Arnold from Coetta Force was on the show.
Love
a while
that dude.
Back.
Shout out to Hank.
Yeah. And he said he was loitering with the intent.
Yeah.
Right? So he never counted his starts as starts because he never was really honestly starting. Do you feel like you were honestly starting, Melissa, with your.
No. I don't. I feel like if I was doing it, I was either doing it for the wrong reasons or because I was court mandated. You know, this is the first time where I myself wanted to do it. And I am taking it 100% seriously.
Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a, to this point, I am a one chip wonder.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
But I don't take any credit. I mean, it just happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like maybe I was just done.
But did you ever try to quit? No program intended. Just try to stop and then.
No, I would switch like from cocaine to Vicodin.
Yeah. I've done that too many times.
Yeah. That was how I meant, you know what I mean? Yeah, this cocaine is getting out of hand. Switch to another substance.
I was so proud when I was just smoking weed, like not drinking.
Oh, yeah.
Just smoking weed. I was like, dude. Because then my life was really good at that time, too, to be honest. I had a great run of just smoking weed. I was really in shape. I was really focused on my career at that time. But it just didn't last.
Yeah.
It never does.
Never does. I don't think so. Good for a little bit. At least for me. I can speak for me.
Right.
Never lasts for me.
Yeah. Doesn't ever last for me either. Hell, I can't even make it past 1 or 2 days just smoking weed. I'm like, all
right,
I need
something
hard and a needle to go with it. So
and even drinking, there was times, you know, that I was like, I'm just gonna go to the bar tonight. You know, I couldn't, but I'm always like the last guy there. There's always something else going
Stumbling
on
out.
When you're, you know what I mean? That crowd ends up surfacing.
Well,
and
so I guess
I'm kind of waiting for him.
Then I guess I did in 98. I had a spiritual experience. I met Jesus, and then I lost all desire for drugs and alcohol. At the time, I was doing meth and smoking and drinking, and I just stopped. And then, but I didn't. It wasn't like recovery, right? It was like I had this spiritual experience, and then I was in church and doing a lot of stuff, and very active.
Yeah.
And then I started drinking because I was over 21. I was 21. And I thought, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm free with Christ and I can drink. Mm-hmm. And so I just started drinking. And then once I allowed myself to drink again, nothing bad happened until like a year later. But it took its time. And then I started doing cocaine. Mm-hmm. I didn't go back to meth, thankfully. Mm-hmm. I did have that period of time. But it wasn't like, okay, I'm stopping. Like,
right.
You know, and
I want to change my life.
2011 when I was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. I have to change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally. All right. So that's
question.
Why these milestones are important here, right? Because there is intention set in the way that we're living now.
Right.
So this first question, what was the first lesson that you learned in sobriety?
Okay, so Melissa and I were talking about this and we're like, what the hell does this mean? So for me, I think that one of the first lessons that I learned was that I had to be able to trust my sponsor. And I had to know that my sponsor not only worked a program, but she had a sponsor and she had my best interest at heart, that she was going to lead me in the right direction and give me, you know, good solution and good guidance and stuff like that. So, you know, without being able to trust her, I don't know where I'd be.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have the same sponsor that I got sober with. I just recently got a new sponsor who is amazing, but, yeah, I think that that was like the first real lesson that I had to learn was like, hey, this is somebody that I have to trust. Mm-hmm. Because if I want to work this program seriously and if I want to do my steps the correct way, I have to trust that they're going to guide me in the right way.
Yeah. Right. And now that was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So Crystal's 3 years. Melissa's 1 year. Mm-hmm. I think we might have covered this before the intro. So, David, you have
13 years.
Ooh. 13 years.
I'm on my 13th year.
What?
I think I'm on my.
So 13th you're going year. To 14.
No.
Are you going?
To I was 12 into my. I'm into my 13th year.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. How many years you got?
In August, it will be 12.
Okay, so I celebrated
12 last year.
Last year.
So well, you I'm didn't celebrate.
13. So you have 12 years.
I didn't really celebrate. Yes, I have 12 years of sobriety. 12 plus. 12 plus.
Leave it to some let alcoholics me get my and time. Addicts. To
let, me grab, my time.
We need calculators for this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right, Melissa, what about for you? What was the first lesson that you learned?
You know, kind of to piggyback off of her, I just feel like trusting people in general, you know, learning to open up to people. I've always been a very closed person, and I had to learn it's okay to open up and be vulnerable and to let people in. I'm a very closed off person. I run from things. I don't deal with things. So being able to trust a sponsor or to trust girlfriends and yeah, you know, it wasn't something I've always been able to do. So just being able to be honest and open with people, that was hard for me.
Yeah, that's huge.
Good. That's big. Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, as someone who's like trying to do that. And I guess like over the years, my level of honesty has, I guess, deepened or grown, right? So
honest with yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the last person.
Yeah.
I'm so delusional. You know what I mean? Like I walk around for days and then I go, oh, I'm the asshole. Damn it.
I am the
did
problem.
It again.
Damn.
Yeah. What about for you, David? What did you learn way back in the day when they didn't have cell phones?
I was thinking about it and I was like, what is the first lesson like I learned in sobriety? I think one of the first ones that comes to mind is, my sobriety really started when I went to prison, but I had a lot of time in jail too, right? So I was in the county jail and I was coming off of heroin really bad. And a friend of mine had a whole shitload of Xanax and Suboxones all crushed up. It was a beautiful color, a mixture of those two colors. But I used that to detox. And then I was like, after I get done with this, I just don't want to be sick. And, you know, just let me get through this. I'm going to be cool. And then as soon as I felt good off of that, like where I come from, and it was like a lot of drugs in the system. You know what I mean? And then when we went to prison, it was really rampant. You know what I mean? It was like I went to a prison that was, they call it the inmates run it. So all the major movement were done by fellow inmates. Right. So when you went here, there was somebody that was kind of like paid to be posted up here to make sure everybody goes here. And all these guys are, everything is like a black market type of hustle. Right. And I started going to AA and NA. I'd go to AA in the morning and NA at night. And I was in every Bible study. So I lived this like real cool regimen of sobriety and rehab and spiritual awakeness. I was really focused. And then a friend of mine had a whole bunch of, not Xanax, what Ativans that he had gotten. And he was like, dude, nobody will know. I was already in this program where I knew I was in the therapeutic community then in prison, right? And I was like, nobody gave us urines really or anything like that. I knew I could do this and get away with it. And it was very secretive and I was tempted and then I said no. So when that happened, I really felt like it was sincerely me saying no to using. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what was the lesson?
The lesson was like I have got something going on with me that can deal with my temptations.
You had power.
I had I gave a power. I had if I didn't work, I know if I wasn't working a program plus church at that that heavy regiment during that time period, I probably would have used.
Right.
And you know, I've been tempted beyond that myself and beyond that, but it was like my lesson was I need these things in my life to if I have any chance at recovery. I have to be in recovery.
Yeah.
You know. That's the paradoxical nature of the powerlessness, right, of step one. It's like when you admit that and you go in and you submit yourself to a process that's greater than you, then you kind of do get a power, right? Because mm-hmm. you were able to go, ah, no, nah, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Right? But that power doesn't exist without the powerlessness.
Right.
Amen. Right? Like,
of course, yeah.
These paradoxical things. A lot of humans don't like that shit, but it's the truth.
It is very true.
A lot of spiritual things are like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what did people try to teach you early on that you weren't willing to learn? Early on. I love when people do that. Early on.
I think that I'm going to go back to, I don't think that I'm going to go in reference to this time that I got clean, only because when I got clean this time, I hit the ground running when I first went into sober living, and I just took all the suggestions that I was given. But back when I was, you know, in treatment after treatment after treatment and just relapse after relapse, I think that people telling me that, like, this program works, I just didn't believe it. So I was completely unwilling to believe that this program could do for me what I could not do for myself. And, you know, even back then, like, I saw people that had time and stuff, but I was so blinded by, like, the obsession and that the craving. For me, it was the craving that really just, like, would push me right back out. Most times one day I would just be like, you know what, screw this, and I'd go right back out. And because once I got that thought in my head that I wanted to get high, it was like I had no defense against it. So, I think for me, all those years, I just was really unwilling to believe that this program had something to offer me. Crazy, because it has everything to offer.
I know what you mean, because, you know, Ricky kind of touched on, like, the process of people going into addiction and, like, the reasons why. And he was saying that, you know, somewhere in a lot of addicts and alcoholics, there's this, like, left out of the group type of mentality. You know, so whenever I would do those same thing, I would be, like, in meetings and people would talk recovery to me, and I just, you know, I'd be in meetings and I would share at meetings and shit like that and talk, but I never felt like I was in a group of me.
Right.
You know what I mean? And when I look back on that, it wasn't because these people were different to me. It was all me. Mm-hmm. All these people in these meetings are me, right? It was me just refusing to accept that.
Right.
And not really even thinking of that, because I was, in that time, I really felt like I was trying to be a part of it, but I just, like, was telling myself, you know, somewhere in my subconscious, I'm telling myself, no, this ain't you. You know, it took a while for me to learn that, to embrace my peers, man. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that was a big change from being sober and to living in recovery, when I embraced my like-minded individuals that were going through the same thing as me.
All those weirdos.
All those weirdos. All those
sober and weird.
All those, like, misfits.
A great combo.
Yeah.
You know, that was something for me too. I always struggled with not feeling like I fit in. And it wasn't until I really learned to love myself and accept myself and be comfortable in my own skin that I was able to venture out and create friendships and relationships and networks and all that, you know? It really took for me to learn to love myself to actually feel like I fit in. I was the problem the whole time, you know? To go off of your question.
Before you do, I want to speak to that, because I like to call that the paradox of connection. Mm-hmm. Mm. Because I can't authentically connect with somebody else until I've authentically connected with me.
Right.
But I also don't know how to relate to myself until I start relating to other people. Mm-hmm. So it's like this simultaneous thing that kind of has to happen. Mm-hmm. And speaking about a group of rebels and kind of, like, you know, outcasts, right, that we are, it's the perfect place for that exercise to happen, right? Because we get around people and we're able to show a little bit of our crazy, a little bit of our wild side, a little bit of our unrefined nature, and then they show a little bit, then you go, okay,
yeah, maybe, like, you're opening up the can now, everybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Show off.
But what you're saying about that connecting to yourself, I think it's such a huge, it's a gift, I think, that we get.
Oh, from, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's part of the working a program, that part. Yeah. Getting to know yourself, being able to look in the mirror, be accepting of things, mm-hmm. you know, like being active in like trying to change things about yourself too, mm-hmm. you know, working on yourself at a deeper level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
'Cause it really goes beyond not using drugs and drinking. It goes beyond that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really working on you the whole time, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what?
Yawning.
You're yawning? You refused the coffee that I offered you.
It's I know, but that's because too. I'll be up.
Oh. So what was the lesson that they tried to teach you early on that you didn't get?
So from the beginning, they, you know how they always say, like, just do what we tell you to do and you'll be fine. I always thought I could do it my way. Right. There's been numerous times where I'm like, oh, you know, I can just go to meetings. I don't have to work the steps, or I can have a sponsor, but not do all the things like get a network, get involved, do service work, all that. So there were so many times where I thought I could do it Melissa's way and kind of just take shortcuts, you know, and it never worked. So I learned that all you got to do is listen. You know, it's a few simple things they tell you to do. And it sounds so hard at the time, but once you finally just do everything they're telling you to do, it just, it's easy peasy, you know?
I think that that's the same thing. I think for me, I felt so good when I would share or if I would relate to somebody at an actual meeting that I felt that, and this is me really trying to, you know, take recovery into consideration, right? That I would be so, like, I would hear people speak and I'd just be, like, overwhelmed at how they articulated the things that I were going through. It's like they were speaking, almost like when you go to church and the preacher's talking straight to you, you know what I mean? I would have so many of those moments and I was like, this is it. Like, I am working this program. I didn't even take into consideration the steps, a sponsor,
right.
you know, being part of a home group, doing any kind of service, none of that meant anything to me. I didn't even know, like, the beginning when everybody starts reading off the pamphlets, that was, like, heavy to me. You know, I was like, yeah, that's it. They're right.
Right.
And then I thought I was so strong in sobriety and recovery, and I never even looked at step one. And I did that for years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was a 90 and 90 guy. I said that before. I was 90 and 90 and then be in meetings daily and really participating, having friends in the meeting too, like a little network. I never worked a step, ever.
Did you stay sober, though?
For a little while, but I always relapsed. So that, right. That's the missing piece, right? I didn't do the extra stuff.
Yep.
You know, that I thought was so far away from me. Like, what the steps? What is that?
I don't need that.
Well, you know, I'm going to call, like, raise your hand, like, and I'm actually going to come up to this dude and say, hey,
can you speak to me?
I don't know you, but I need you. For my sponsor, would you consider that? It's right. freaking too awkward for me at the time, man. You know,
I get that.
Yeah,
totally get that.
I think they tried to teach me humility, you know, and I don't think I was really getting it. You know, I mean, I was pretty done, right, in the beginning, and willing to do whatever. But I think I didn't have that humility. I think.
What is that? Like, tell me, what do you mean?
Over the last 11 years, that's what the Lord's been working on, is like this breaking down this pride in me, you know, because one of the things that I did is, you know, I kind of like turned it into this was my new addiction kind of thing, like Mr. Right. Recovery. Like, I'm this thing now. And I think, like, what the steps was trying to do and does do is like, it breaks down that ego, that projection. Like, I think of like there's a me that's running this projector, right? Just spinning the shit out of this thing to get the projection out so that everyone else sees what I want you to see. Well, when I first got sober, I was still running that projector. Right. And it wasn't
and trying to get in front of the camera at the same time.
Yes. And it wasn't until 5 years in when I had a complete mental breakdown, still sober, that I was like, oh, I can't run this projector anymore and be a real boy. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to choose which one. And really, I think year five was when the shift really happened to me. That's when I think the humility started, because I got broke down, you know, because I was running on self-will. It's just like what it says, right? Like, I was the the one that was doing all the being nice to get my way, mm-hmm. right? Doing all the right things, right? But isn't this person still just a selfish seeking person, right? That was me.
That's a paradoxical
5 years.
That's a paradoxical situation whenever you're like, when you realize, when you have this intention of like being this beacon to like people in recovery, like you're trying to be an example, right? That can be the sincere start. I want to be an example to these guys. I want to show these guys, you know, recovery is possible and stuff like that, right? Then it takes a couple of people to say, man, dude, you're rocking that shit.
Oh, yeah.
And you say, oh, yeah. And I go through the whole thing again. Now my intentions inside of me, I know my ego's starting to really run over all this.
This is that do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing.
Amen.
Yes. All right.
That's good stuff.
You know, I've heard from multiple people that the fifth year is the hardest year. What do you think about that? Or do you agree? Or
people told me that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wish y'all didn't tell me that.
I always heard it was 7.
I always heard it was 3.
Oh, well.
Well, who knows?
Well, for me, 5 was the magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 was when it started really breaking down. Okay. I think, like, that's the beauty of this program, right? It's like, the longer that I stay in this thing, the more it changes and evolves, because the more I'm changing and evolve, and I'm breaking slowly but surely, being broken down more and more and more. That's the beauty of staying plugged in. And I think, and maybe it is, maybe it's just something about like years, because you think like, you know, how long did it take for us to build these personas, right?
Yeah.
Long time. And the drugs and alcohol really was just like one of the things the persona liked to do.
Yeah. Right.
But the persona liked to do a lot of other weird stuff too, you know? Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So I think it's just a matter of it's when that can occur. But also, I don't know that that's necessarily true. Has to be true.
Right.
Because I do think some people, I think for David, for instance, David was so hardcore out there in the streets that when the relief came, I think you got it.
Yeah.
I think you were so receptive to the relief that you got it. I think that's like, I was still like a safe, you know, I didn't get arrested. I didn't, you know, I had my own emotional bottoms in addiction. But I think when somebody has gone so far off the path and lived, you know, so broken that when you get that light and that love and you get some reset, you get revived.
Yeah.
You go, oh yeah, now I'm back. Thank God. Right.
Or thank God. Yeah. Like I, this is happening. Like, oh my gosh, I got it. Somebody's giving me another chance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm getting another chance at this. I can't screw this up again.
Right.
Because it's been so, like, beyond bad, in my opinion. It's, like, it's beyond bad.
Well, Crystal, you did a video, like, a little highlight reel of your
before, I was, like, leading up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you...
Hardcore, right?
Yeah. Do you feel like, kind of, like, using that as an example of kind of, like, going so far off and then coming back and...
So, I tried to find, like, the worst of me and, like... Those little clips and pictures don't do it justice of how bad my life was.
Right.
But you can still see that I'm sick. You know what I mean? So, I think that it's very important for people to physically see, like, this is who this person was and this is who they are now, whether they know who I am or not. Mm-hmm. I think that it's very important for people to see that because, you know, you just never know what seed you might plant. And who might reach out to you? Like I had somebody who I used to use with, back in the day. And, you know, she reached out to me just the other morning and was like, listen, I really want what you have. What can you recommend that I do?
Nice.
And I told her, I said, you know, what is your living situation? Are you able to go into treatment? And literally the next day she messaged me and she was like, this is the treatment center that I'm in. I'm having to do a really long detox because of, you know, she broke not her back, but she broke like all the bones down in her ankle, like, and she's got like a ton of plates and screws and stuff. So, she relapsed on pain meds, and like, it wasn't,
Man, what a process.
Yeah, jeez. In her mind, like, we used to do meth and all kinds of other crazy shit back then. But, you know, she realized that, like, this is a problem. This is changing who I am. This is changing the way that I think. And she was just miserable. So, you know, I think that so much of how I post my recovery all over social media, I think that it gives people that token of, like, I can reach out to this person and maybe they can help me.
It's a safe space.
So, you know, I want, you know, I hate for people to see the person that I was, because it was just a terrible individual that I used to be. But I also, in the same breath, think that it can save lives. So I'm willing to make that sacrifice to say, hey, this is the shit asshole that I was, but this is who I am today.
Yeah.
You know what I love about, like, when you post pictures like that, and you post a lot of pictures of, like, your friend group and, like, your network. As like, when I see your pictures, I'm like, damn, these are some real ass people.
Yeah.
Like, really living different. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It just looks, there's an authentic piece in your post that you guys are some real ass dudes, just not using anymore and really trying to live a different kind of life.
Absolutely.
And still be happy, still have fun, still do things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Still active, still hanging.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
And I think that's a great vision, because I think a lot of people, when they first enter recovery or the thought of sobriety, they think loneliness, and they think like awkwardness,
can't have
and they
fun.
Think boredom.
Yeah,
what are we gonna do?
Yeah, that's a big one. You know?
Yeah, and I think so. My biggest inspiration is a girl that's out in Rome, and she founded Unified in Recovery, and she is the one who really inspired me to doing these adventures and like fellowship of like outings and stuff like that, because it is so important for people to realize that there is a life outside of drugs and alcohol that we can truly enjoy.
Mm-hmm. And it's important for you and your recovery.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Because you it's kind of like, you know, you got to live at the same intensity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That
absolutely.
Like, that's the thing. It's like the intensity of you doesn't go away because you get sober.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like now it's just you're pointing that energy into a different direction.
Right. Into positive things.
Yes, yeah. More healthy version.
Yeah.
That's a whole thing right there.
Yeah.
The process of being able to do that, because I can't tell you how many people go, somebody just said, man, I'm going to this extravagant place, you know, and he's going to like the Caribbean and, you know, we're going to go like mountain climbing or something like that, or doing some really cool shit, like epic, exotic stuff. But he's saying it like, yeah, I'm just going to.
This one,
gonna go do that. I was like, damn, dude, like it could, because he's admittedly said, I don't know how to live this life of recovery.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's
right.
So it's not the things. It's like, I'm really focusing on
the ocean
changing.
Is great, but it ain't got nothing on here.
That's what I'm saying.
You know
I'm gonna go
saying?
Bungee jumping. Man, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like bungee jumping is great, but have you ever done cocaine?
Yeah, so, but here's the thing. So I think like, for me, I used to live that fast life. Like I just constantly was on the go. Like phone always ringing because I was selling drugs at the end of it. And it was just like, I felt, you know, everybody needed me. And so really, I love that you say that our same intensity, well, really that doesn't change. And it like just a light bulb went off and it really doesn't change. Like, I think that I'm so involved in the rooms because I feel needed. I feel like people love me. I feel like, you know, I still need that fast life. And that's why I'm always on the go. But in doing so, like, I'm trying to drag everybody with me. Like, come on. Like, her, right. you know? Like, I meet people and I'm
she's
like,
she's on the
on.
Show. They knew each other for a couple days.
Yeah. yeah. I'm right. like, you just have no idea who you just met. Like, I'm about to change your life.
And it's such a God thing because I've been saying I want to get more involved. I want to, you know, get a bigger network. I want to just get involved. And then I met her. Yeah. You know, it's just the craziest
thing. Answer prayer.
Yeah.
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 Well, and to like, you know, and you're not kind of doing this unhindered, right? We talked about this on the Back to the Basics episode, right? There is, you're measured in your approach and you know you got to take time for yourself and Absolutely. Self-care and stuff like that. So, all right, I like this one. So of all the first year chips, I'm talking about, you know, 30, 60, 90. Mm-hmm.
Oh, like different times. So,
which is the most meaningful? Yeah, yeah. The 30, the 60, the 90, okay. the six months, nine months. Everyone up to that year. What's the one that you're like in those early ones that you were like, that was a transitional milestone point for me, you know?
I could say this past time around. I mean, obviously, my 1 year chip was great, but the white chip. This last time, it just meant so much to me because there's been so many times that I have picked it up. But like I said earlier, I was doing it for the wrong reason or I wasn't fully in it. This time, I desperately had the gift of desperation. I was ready. And just picking up that chip, I knew my life was going to change. You know, I was ready. You yeah. know, I almost died. You know, I broke my back and both of my feet. I was on bed rest for months. I was in ICU for weeks. You know, I was so ready for that change and I knew it was time to do something. I had to. I didn't have a choice, you know. So for me, I could say this past time, it was the white chip for sure.
Clip that right there. That's a good one.
That was great.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you knew when you were getting, do you still have that chip somewhere?
Yeah, I do actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have them all.
Yeah.
yep.
It's like it's got them all sitting on this thing.
That's how I am. They're right on my dresser, like all laid out.
Yeah. But he doesn't have his white chip. He only has from like, cause in CMA we do every single month. So, he has like from month 3 to month 11 right now. Cause he's about to hit 1 year, but I'm like, what happened to the other two?
yeah.
So for me, man, I don't really know. I think my 9 month chip, because I've never, like, I was able to get a 6 month chip. Okay, so all the times before, I never even probably got to 30 or 60 days or whatever, but I went to jail and then I got out and I was on pretrial for like a little over 6 months. So I was clean because I had that accountability. And so I got my 6 months that way. But then the guy that I went to jail with, he took all the charges and it exonerated me from the case. And I ended up relapsing. So that was as far that I had, that was the farthest that I had ever gotten. But in that 6 months, I had really tasted what recovery was like. I like finally had found that little bit of freedom in the rooms, and really was able to build like a family. So this go around when I like, you know, because I had been a chronic relapser so many times, I never could take the chip seriously. Cause I'm like, is this going to be, you know, am I going to get the next one type of thing? Like, I just didn't know like what tomorrow held. Like I wasn't strong in my recovery, but I think, you know, they say the 9 month chip is the hardest chip to get. And I don't know. I think all the chips are the hardest chips to get. So, but when I was able to get my 9 month chip this go around, I was like, okay, I might be onto something like this. You know, this is the longest that I had ever stayed sober. And so, for 9 consecutive months, I'm like, okay, I think like this might be the beginning of the beginning for me. So that was really when I was able to stop and be like, maybe this is the direction that I'm going to head into.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, continuing to relapse. And I've just, stuck it out since then.
Yeah. All right.
Love that.
What about for you, David? Well, because you were in prison when, were they doing
chips
there?
Chips. Mm-hmm.
I swear. Were people like shaving their chips down to shanks or something? Or like ninja stars or something like
I honestly, and I never found too much value in the chip system.
Okay.
I never, it was just, I would acknowledge them, I would get them. I felt good, you know, spoke at a couple of them. I never, but one thing I love watching people get chips. Mm-hmm. I love that. But I especially in the first year.
Is it because you feel like, oh, you should have been doing this anyway?
Something like that. It's like, well, it's kind of like.
It's like, here's your congratulation for not being an asshole.
Yeah, it's like somewhere along that line. It's like, I gotta go get the next one. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
You're already moving on.
Yeah, it's like, you know, game's not over. I gotta keep it moving, man. So I never. But recently, like when I hit, a nickel, I was like, oh, okay, things have changed. Ten. Yeah. Whoa.
Well, you're. Years, I have to confiscate him and take him out to lunch or somewhere and make him celebrate his milestones, because he just doesn't even now, years into it, he still doesn't. So it's like I got to get him and slow him down and take him to the most exquisite fine diamond.
We did that. That's fun. That's great. That's much appreciated. We
went to, because I believe in celebrating. I think you got to celebrate that shit.
Me too. Yeah,
big time.
Yeah, I love being in that celebration too, to be honest. It's just that my thought process is on, you know, next.
All right. Yeah. Do you celebrate your belly button birthday?
Yeah. I think so. But not really, not as much as I used to. 50, I was pretty happy at 50. You
know, that was like 10 years ago. Yeah. Yeah, I would say, I know this is cheating on answering the question, because it was actually the year. I do remember someone getting 60 days, and I was just out of treatment, and I had 30, so I was in that in-between, and thinking, damn, 60, like in a row? Like I was at 30, and I thought, like, yo, I thought I'd done something, you know, and then I saw someone get 60, and I thought, ooh, that's a long way away.
Now that inspires me,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I guess I'm in my position is pretty stupid, right? But I love when somebody gets up, or if we're at a meeting that's kind of like big enough where multiple people are getting up and grab. I'm like, yo, I'm a part of a real team here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You go to 8111. It's like half the place is getting up, like 3 months, rah, the whole crowd goes up. 6 months, another whole crowd comes up, you know? So I do find inspiration in that and fun.
So when I got my year, my first year, the next day I'm driving into work. My work had sent me to rehab. And so I'm driving into work, and I just reflecting on all the people that God had put in my life in this last year. And so I just start bawling, crying. Tears of joy and gratitude. And so then I pull up to the job, and my eyes are blown out, bloodshot red. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to walk in. They're going to think that I'm blitzed right now. So I had to go in and ask my manager for Visine, because I'm like, yo, I got to get. And I had to say, look, man, I did relapse. I'm just really emotional because I got my year.
What a great excuse.
Right.
No, I'm not high, man. No. It's my anniversary. Can I grab that Visine real quick, please?
All right, so if it's just one day at a time, why all this hype about milestones?
I like this one.
Yeah.
It's a great question.
I feel like milestones aren't for you. Milestones are for everyone else, you know.
Damn.
Think
Fill
about just
that.
Coming in and you know, you're like, oh my god, how am I gonna make it 24 hours? Then you see someone your age or even younger, or anyone for that matter, pick up 30 days, a year, 13 years, you know. It's just an inspiration. It's not for you, it's to show people that it's possible. Like, look how happy I am and I'm picking up a chip, or it's just possible. you know?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
I think you deaded the answer on that,
yeah.
though.
Dude,
I don't know who else could come with that.
Killed that one.
I've been thinking about that one. I really like that one.
Great. Killed it. Clip that one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a buddy that quit going to the rooms because he saw someone with 20-something years pick up a 20-something year chip, and he was miserable. He had 10 years at the time. He watches this guy with 20-something years pick his chip up and just miserable. And he goes, I'm out. And, and he's still sober to this day.
But he just left the rooms.
He just left the rooms. He's like, I can't. I'm out of this. I don't want this part of
someone. One bad apple ruin
the... Yeah, I know. And I'm like, dude, you know you could have just gone to a different meeting. Like, there's like 1,000 of them. But for him, it was just such a turnoff, which kind of let me be mindful a bit of like, okay, like...
Let me not be miserable when I pick up my chips.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, okay, so I'm going to give a little backstory. You guys already know because I just told you this, but the way that me and Melissa met was because we were both celebrating at a meeting. And I had, you know, my 2-year chip, and my mom buys me like a fancy chip every year. It's in a keychain, and it's like very,
so cool.
Very, very symbolic. Like those mean something to me. And
from mom,
you know, God kept telling me the whole meeting that I needed to give it to her. And I'm like, I just don't know about that. Like, this is sacred to me. Like, you know, this really means something to me, but God kept telling me you need to give it away. Mm-hmm. So, I did just that. And so, I couldn't agree more with the fact of the milestones are not for us.
Right.
It is for other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's fun to celebrate them. Like, you know, yes, I am huge on celebrations. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it big all the time for everything. I don't care what it is. If it's a celebration of anything, like we're going to party. Mm-hmm. But, I think that in like specifically in the rooms, I think that that gives other people hope. Especially when, you know, there's people who are literally sitting you know, because most of the time when people come in, they have nothing. They feel nothing. They are just nothing, right? You know, right in front of you. And so I think that it's important for us to pick up, you know, different milestones and just show people that this program really works.
Right.
It's very, very important.
Well, to like you are practicing like the philosophy of AA by owning something sacred to you and knowing I own this and the use I'm going to do with this is I'm going to give it away.
Right. I know,
to give that, dude. That is.
Listen, I got in the car and I looked at my husband and I was like, I have no idea why I just did that.
Yeah.
Like, because that's. So those are so important to me. Mm-hmm. And he was like, and you know, at that point I still hadn't formed a connection with her. Like, not like we have, you know, this past week, but I didn't understand it. I was like, God, why do you want me to do this? Why? Mm-hmm. Like, why? Yeah. Why do I have to give this away? You know, but that was me being selfish. And so, I mean but look where it's brought me, you know. It's given me somebody that is going to be a wonderful friend to me. I can already tell. And it's you know, because like I said to Christian, is like, had I have not done that, I probably would have congratulated her after the meeting and we just would have went our separate ways. Yeah. But by
sealed
doing that, yes, by doing that, it sealed the deal.
Right.
It added another person to my network that I can vibe with, you know?
And with it being so symbolic to her, that just like motivates me, because I know it's something special to her and she's giving it to me. So that motivates me even more to not want to let her down. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And the fact that like, it just brought us so close together. Like, we had never met, we had never talked, we had never seen each other. She gave me her chip and I swear to God, it was the longest hug in the world. And we both bawled our eyes out and there was just a weird connection, you know,
and totally a God thing.
Here we are a week later and that's what the chip does. You know, it gives people hope. It gives people meaning. It tells me that she cares, you know?
Yeah.
Priceless moment.
Yeah.
My one of my favorite ones is I got a keychain, and they didn't have any, and it was my 10 years. And this lady was like, oh, you can have my 10.
Oh.
Like, I'm trying not to cry right now. Because yeah. I was like, oh, that was, that's an important one right there.
Right.
Yeah. All whole decade.
And it's like, it's in, like, the value of that exchange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's priceless.
It's such a selfless act.
It's such a selfless act, and it's such a meaningful thing. And again, it is like confirming why, like, that philosophy in the rooms is suggested.
Right.
You know what I mean? Why that's give it away. Like, what does that mean, give it away? I give you my 10-year chip. I give you, you know, my 2-year chip. Like, these things are freaking, like, my trophies, man.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the crazy thing about it is just a couple of days before that meeting, I actually gave my 1-year chip to a girl who had a week. And she was in there. She was broken. She was crying. She was young. She was like, I don't know if I can do this. She's like, you guys are all so happy. Like, can I ever be that happy? Will I ever be that happy? Does it ever get easier? And I gave her my 1-year chip, and no one's ever given me a chip before. So when she did that to me, it kind of gave me a sense of what that girl was feeling. You know, it was just a full circle moment. It was, it was really cool.
That's awesome.
I love that.
All right. So before we go to the last question, I got a little spiel on this, these chips leading up to a year.
All right.
So this is my interpretation of it. Okay. I think that the ego is still very much in control in this first year.
Yes.
And the ego needs 30-day, 60-day, 90-day.
Love it.
Because the ego is going through a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. And it's getting told no a lot. Mm-hmm. And so when it gets a chance to get up there and everyone's clapping for it, it's like, yeah, I'll take it. But by the time you get to a year, though, we are like all expecting that your ego is in enough check because you ain't getting another congratulations for another year.
Well, some of them do 18 months.
Oh, snap.
That's some bullshit. No, I'm just like,
I think it is, too. I'm like,
no, that's cool. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. But I think it's a beautiful thing. I mean, because without that kind of constant kind of reminder of like, okay, you're doing good. You're on the path, you know, and then once you get to that year, it is kind of like, okay, now you have a little bit of time and it's not about you anymore.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And I think it's okay if it takes a year for you to get to that point. I mean, it certainly took me more than a year. It took me years to go, oh, this isn't about me.
Right.
I still have to be reminded of that.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. All right. So
hopefully by a year you got the understanding that the whole idea of this is living a life of service.
Yeah.
And that ideally. Kind of sinks in a little bit. You know what I mean? So.
Well, it didn't for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like, I would say probably around 18 months right before my 2 years is when, like, it really, you know, sunk in, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
It takes what it takes.
I've never heard anybody, say, like, what you just said about the ego and the chips, and it totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like bam, 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 all the way up to a year. It's like every time, and especially in CMA, Lord, you get one every month.
Yeah.
And it's like every time you turn around, you're getting a chip, and you think like it really does boost your ego. You're like, hell yeah, I can do this. And then you get to a year, and it's like, hell yeah, I can do this. And then you got to wait a whole nother year. I mean, some places do 18 months, but even waiting those 6 more months, it's like, what the hell? So that's why when I finally do hit my milestone, because let me tell you, that year is so long for me. When I finally do hit the milestone, I'm like, hell yeah, time to celebrate.
Yes. All right. So what do you know now that you wish you would have known day one? Now, first off, I know all things work for the good and that it all happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. Right. But this is just kind of like a wisdom moment where you're like, I would have saved myself a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. Right. Had I known this one thing in the beginning. Everyone's thinking.
It's a great question, man.
Yeah.
Frame the question for me one more time. If say it again.
What do you know now that you wish you would have known day one?
Day one of sobriety.
Yeah.
I think I wish I would have known at the beginning that you can really seriously accomplish things. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, you can really do it because, you know, man, I didn't know that. Before it wasn't like I didn't have, I don't know, a typical like spiritual moment into recovery. It was a real slow roll for me. You know what I mean? I had accepted that I was going to be an addict forever, you know, with a sober mind. You know what I mean? Like, this is just going to keep happening to me. I got to try to find out a way that keeps me from like coming back to these institutions and being chased down by the law all the time and try to keep some sort of money in my pocket while I'm like functioning. I want to function doing heroin and crack and drinking
because thinking that
pills and like doing
because thinking things. That you could live without those things was wasn't even an option for you, even when you were in that sober mind,
even when I was totally sober
eventually mind. This bottle's gonna drop out, I'm gonna go back to using it again.
That was my mindset in sobriety, and it took a long time to get that hope. It was a slow roll.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think it was a Bill W. type of moment for me, you know, personally. Yeah. So I wish I would have known that at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know.
All right.
So I think for me, I really wish I would have known that, like, my finances were just going to be okay.
Mm.
They're okay? I wish I would know that now.
Well, I mean, so like.
No, but that's a huge.
No, that's big.
That's one that, you know, we see causes a lot of relapse.
Oh, my gosh. And it was about to cause me to not have a husband because when you first come into sobriety, like you get these shit in jobs, like you're not qualified to make $100,000 a year. Like. These things take time, and I did not want to accept that. So I thought, you know, I deserve this job where I'm making X amount of money a year and all these benefits and blah, 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 blah. And really, I'm just making like ends meet, which I mean, it. And so for me, it caused a lot of stress in my household with me and my husband because I just was so fearful around finances and I just didn't know where the next, you know, thing was going to come from. Didn't know how this was going to happen. Didn't like, I just thought things were never going to get better for us financially. And they just do. They just do. And so if I would have really been able to see where I am today, which I mean, don't get me wrong. I still have a lot of growing to do, but I'm comfortable. If I could have seen that and known like, this is where, you know, just give it time, then I think I would have saved myself a lot of a headache.
Because
let me tell
that's
you,
a great one.
I would, my mind would spin for hours and hours and hours about the finances and I'd sit there. I mean, Shane can tell you because Shane is just so go with the flow and he's just like, it'll come. And I'm like down to like every little penny, like, frantic. But it does. It God it works. Out. God works in his own time.
Yeah.
God works his own, you know, magic. And so, that would have saved me a lot of anxiety. So that would have been nice.
That's something that I have to really, like, really get into prayer about. I really have to talk to my peers about it. I really have to have some, like, good self-talk about that because for me, I have this, like, innate fear of everything just crumbling into nothing, you know, almost like I kind of like, you know, that thought process over, if I look back at my life, that thought process is really manifesting the destruction that would happen to me repeatedly.
Right.
So, and finance is a big part of that. Like, I'm like, I'm not going to have the money, you know, if I'm celebrating something and it looks really good and everybody's having fun, I'm like, damn, dude, am I going to be able to do this next year? A piece, it's like I'm split in half. I always talk about this. It's like I'm split in half. I'm celebrating like a cool thing that I'm able to do now because my money is where it's at, right?
Right.
I'm economically cool in this part of my life, and we can have fun and celebrate, and my kids are like, you know, getting some of it, and I'm able to do this for Olive because of where I am financially, right? And I'm happy. But then it's like split right down the middle. It's like, am I going to be able to keep doing this?
Right.
Because I'm always, there's self-fear in me that's always worried about being able to do it again. Am I setting her up?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a fear that I have deep inside myself. So I have to really
talk myself,
pray about it.
I totally get that.
Work the program, do that shit. You know what I mean? Over and over.
I mean, I still live paycheck to paycheck, but...
Yeah.
I live paycheck to paycheck because I spend more money. The more you make, the more you spend.
More money, more problems.
Y'all get paychecks, dude? I mean, you guys get paychecks? That's cool. That's cool. I'm over here begging for scraps. You know what I'm saying?
Paychecks, huh? What's that like?
The Lord's like, we're going to call you to be a minister. Huh? Does that come with a salary? No, motherfucker.
What do I cap out at ministry?
Nah. What about for you? What do you wish you knew, Melissa?
You know, this one's been really hard for me. I've been thinking about it the past couple of days, and the only thing that keeps coming to mind, which I'm still not where I want to be when it comes to it, is self-love and that everything is going to be okay.
Mm.
You know, I've never... given myself enough credit or believed that I was worthy of good things or good friends or a good life, you know? So I've always been very hesitant, you know, and I still have a long, long, long way to go, but you know, I've just never felt I was good enough to deserve all these nice things and all these nice people. And just, I wish I knew that it was all going to be okay. You know, you will make it. You will learn to love yourself. You will learn to accept love. I'm tearing up, but you know, just that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, as a counselor, right? And I counsel a lot of people daily. And that's one phrase that I never, ever want to become cliche. Everything is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because I try to choose that saying because I believe that. Right?
Yeah.
But I try to choose it like as wisely as I possibly can, because out of all the things that I think I've ever said to somebody to be helpful or to like counsel them through whatever situations they're going through, I don't think I've ever observed that phrase have such a deep impact on somebody when it's... the person giving it is saying it and they mean it, like everything's going to be okay. That's like such a powerful thing to tell somebody. And if they take that and they believe you, like I can, watching a person's like eyes light up or their posture straighten up a little bit, the courage that you get from that little phrase is probably the most powerful thing that I tell people in my work.
Don't ever say that shit to me. That'll piss me off. If I'm in the middle of it and I'm going through it and you're like, everything's going to be okay,
that's
I'm going
to say,
oh, really? Everything's going
to
be okay, David?
That's
really?
Why you have to be wise.
Did you just hear everything I just told you?
How do you know?
Don't you dare tell me everything's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think that's a common theme there, you know, and there's a scripture that comes to mind, which is that all things work for the good of those who are in Christ Jesus, who live and walk according to his spirit.
Amen.
And when I think of that, I think of like there is this Christ consciousness, this God consciousness that I think those of us in recovery access. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think we access it without the bounds of religion. And you know, all things work for the good of those in Christ Jesus who live and walk according to his spirit. So as long as I stay in this mindset, in this God consciousness or kingdom of God mindset, right, that everything will work for my good, even the heart, even the addiction, even the pain, even the jail time, all this stuff will eventually turn into my good. And that's something to say that it is going to be okay, right? And it doesn't feel okay. But it will work for your good.
Yeah.
If we keep in that, right? It's for those who live and walk according to the Spirit. Amen. You got to stay plugged in.
Yes, you do.
Because when we unplug and we tap out, which we all can, we all have that option, right? Mm-hmm. Then we're not in that flow. And then that redemption, that redeeming quality is a little harder to grasp, right?
Yeah, man. You're talking about we're just regurgitating the whole structure of the steps.
Right.
It's like we're giving, we're surrendering. We understand that, like, if we don't have God or higher power or whatever you want to call it, we're not going to be sane. Okay. So we're putting our dependence on the dependence of our sanity on that actual philosophy. God will restore us to sanity. Right. And then once that comes into play, the rest of it is like, God, it's all you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I know I will be okay because you are leading me. Your will be done in my life. Mm-hmm. So no matter how that perspective, if you are going through a very tough, bad part of your journey, you know, that perspective should carry you through and give you an understanding, even though it's really bad. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't really think that, like, oh, this shit sucks, but just having that somewhere in your scope of, understanding is the comfort of knowing it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because it's God's will anyways, man.
Well, for me, the most challenging times are not the hard times. It's the good times.
Yeah.
Right.
It's when things, everything's going well. Mm. That's when my self-sabotager comes up.
Wow.
That's when that freaking hyper-achiever, hyper-vigilant kind of guy comes out and starts going, oh, what's going to happen now? Mm-hmm. Everything's going good. So something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
So
that's everything that goes up must come down.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's a saying right there. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, that's a horrible way. That's a torturous way to live.
It is.
Because you're never, like, oh, look at the sun shining. Well, it's about to go down.
Come sunset. Come about 3 more hours. It's going to get dark. Real dark.
Well, I think this has been great. I think we covered milestones pretty well. Yeah. And I think, congratulations on both of you.
Yeah, thank man.
You. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Amazing. Awesome. I love it.
Yeah. And I think it's wonderful, Melissa, for you at a year to already be talking about self-love and connecting to yourself, because, I mean, I just started getting on that Sunday for last. So, I'm glad to hear that.
How gangster for it is, like, she just meets Crystal, right? And it's like, oh, yeah, you want to be friends? Yeah, oh.
Let's do a podcast.
Come on, let's go. Hey, let's go up to Roswell. I got some homies. They got a whole studio. We about to go talk shit live on YouTube tonight. You got the whole thing set up. Some bullets.
Yeah.
This is how we get down.
Listen, I'll drag anybody that wants to go with me on this ride,
I love it.
But... you know, I want to point out to you, Melissa, that it has taken me 3 years to figure out what exactly self-love looked like. I say all the time that, my first year was me just trying to figure out how to stay sober.
Right.
My second year was me trying to figure out how to work the steps. And then, my third year was me trying to figure out how to live them. And in learning to live the steps, you really are able to get in touch with who you are as a person, what direction you want to go in life. Like, 1 year is a huge accomplishment, but you are still very, very new in recovery. So here you go. I'm going to tell you, just give it time.
Yeah.
Keep digging in and don't give up, dude. And you'll see it. God unlocks doors that, you just... one day you're going to be sitting back and you're going to be like, man, I really am the shit.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I concur. All right. So this message has been brought to you by Most High Ministries.
Download
the
app.
Thank you, Jacob, for running the ones and twos. Download the app, Most High Media. And if you need help and you're looking to try to reach a milestone in your life and you want some help with that, reach out to us, mosthighmedia.org, contact@themosthighshow.com, and I'll be there for you.
It's all about the newcomer, baby, so take that suggestion to heart.
All right. Thank you for listening.